Tonight, that disputed secret memo revealed as President Trump overrules the FBI. What it says and doesn't say about the feds, the Trump dossier, and a British spy. Unprecedented disclosures blasted by James Comey as dishonest and misleading. A wild day in Washington. The flu emergency getting even worse. The most people hospitalized in years as 16 more children die, including a teenage girl, after doctors sent her home.
They said that it was allergies, sent her back to school in 2 days.
Her parents now warning your family. The stock market plunges its worst week in 2 years. Is the record surge over? And what it means for your 401k? A father's rage explodes in court, lunging at disgraced gymnastics Dr. Larry Nassar before being tackled to the ground. The fired employee who triggered that terrifying false alarm of a missile attack in Hawaii. Tonight he's speaking out for the first time to NBC News. And the massive security operation here in Minneapolis before the big game begins.
This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening from the Super Bowl host city, a chilly Minneapolis. Our reporting from on the ground here in a few minutes. But we, of course, start with the firestorm raging in Washington tonight, hours after President Trump declassified a Republican-crafted memo that tries to make the case that the FBI played fast and loose in its gathering of evidence in the Russia investigation. The president made the politically charged memo public despite warnings from the head of the FBI that it would be a mistake. And tonight, he's using it as ammo in his latest salvo against his own Justice Department. Tonight, a look at just what that memo says and the telling glimpses it offers into how the Russia investigation is proceeding. Let's start with NBC's Peter Alexander. Peter, good evening.
Hey, Lester, good evening to you. The release of this memo comes amid months of relentless attacks by President Trump against the very people who are leading the Russia investigation. This memo is not a legal document, not an intelligence finding. And tonight, even the president's own lawyer says it's the opinion of the Republicans who wrote it.
President Trump tonight defying the FBI and Justice Department.
Why make this memo public?
I think it's a disgrace what's happening in our country. A lot of people should be ashamed of themselves, and much worse than that.
By midday, that memo, first leaked to conservative media outlets, was posted by House Republicans. It accuses senior law enforcement officials of abusing their powers to spy on a former Trump campaign advisor, Carter Page, who they suspected was a foreign agent for Russia. The memo alleges the application for a warrant relies on an unverified dossier compiled by Christopher Steele, an ex-British intelligence operative, and fails to disclose the role of the DNC or Clinton campaign in funding Steele's efforts. But tonight, a Democratic congressional source says the court was told about Steele's political bias, but may not have been specifically told that the information was financed by Democrats. A former government lawyer says what matters is whether Steele knew what he was talking about, not what motivated him.
We shouldn't be surprised when our informants, the bases for our affidavits, are less than savory.
Democrats in the intelligence community argue the memo is inaccurate and misleading. The disputed document also reveals that Trump appointed Justice Department officials, including Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, were among those who signed off 4 times on renewing warrant requests, meaning the surveillance of Carter Page was producing results. Its release, unprecedented, undercutting trust between the intelligence community and members of Congress that oversee it.
It's that undermining of the trust which makes it enormously more difficult for the FBI and the CIA to do their jobs.
Tonight, FBI Director Christopher Wray sending a message to all of his employees, strongly defending his agency, making clear he's not going to leave. Peter Alexander, NBC News, the White House.
I'm Hallie Jackson in Washington, where that 4-page memo is now a partisan grenade.
Intent here is to shut down the investigation.
4 times they took this dossier and dressed it all up like it was some legitimate intelligence.
So is the memo evidence of an anti-Trump conspiracy or an attempt to smear the special counsel's Russia investigation? Depends who you ask. With the man who oversees the special counsel under a microscope, Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein.
You figure that one out.
Since Rosenstein oversees the special counsel, Democrats worry the memo will be used as a pretext to discredit and dismiss Rosenstein and ultimately end the special counsel investigation.
They hope to help the White House in its effort to undermine the FBI, undermine Bob Mueller, throw discredit on the government, anything but look at the Russia investigation and what the Trump campaign did.
Democrats argue the memo is filled with factual errors and could bring the U.S. to the brink of a constitutional crisis. Some Republicans see it differently.
There was nothing factually inaccurate.
The American citizens that are represented before this court have to be protected. And the only place that can protect them is the U.S. Congress when abuses do occur.
Still, others in the GOP, like Susan Collins, argue the legitimate oversight function Congress should have has been tarnished by partisanship, with House Speaker Paul Ryan cautioning this memo should not be used to impugn the integrity of the justice system and FBI.
It's really important for Republicans to take a step back and think, these are public servants. Mm. We need to stop and remember that they're serving the country, and our language and our tone needs to be measured.
Democrats want their so-called counter memo to be released as well, but it's not clear if or when a vote on that will happen. The political battle on this has gotten so heated. The top Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee is telling NBC News late tonight he thinks the top Republican should step down from that chairmanship altogether. Lester?
Hallie Jackson at the White House tonight. Thank you. Tonight, the flu season is getting worse, with the number of people hospitalized soaring to the highest in 8 years. Federal health officials say 16 more children have died from this year's flu, bringing the total to 53. And weeks after public health officials hoped the season might have peaked, it's still going strong across most of the nation. We get the latest now from NBC's Rahema Ellis.
15-year-old Kira Molina sent home after doctors in Georgia said she tested negative for the flu.
They said that it was allergies, sent her back to school in 2 days.
But 5 days later, she died. Her parents now warning,
do what you have to do. Go have a recheck. Don't check.
The flu has killed 53 children so far this season, compared to 15 this time last year. And half of the children this year had been perfectly healthy. Today, the CDC says while flu cases are starting to decrease slightly in the West, they're still widespread everywhere else.
We are not out of the woods yet. Influenza seasons can last between 11 to 20 weeks, and we're just at week 10.
Yet another reminder, it's not too late to get a flu shot, especially considering 80% of the kids who've died never got vaccinated.
Even if the flu vaccine is not 100% effective, still reducing your chances of getting this illness and the severity of the illness.
And as the CDC reports record high hospitalizations, half of those were people who had no previous health problems. Doctors at Maimonides Medical Center in New York still seeing more flu patients every week, including 22-year-old Charlie Shields.
Regret not getting the flu shot, and I definitely will make an appointment to get it from now on.
For parents especially, here are the signs that someone is seriously ill. Symptoms that appear to get better then suddenly get worse. They could be an indication there's secondary infection that could become deadly. Lester?
Rahema Ellis in New York tonight. Thank you, Rahema. Mixed news on the American economy tonight. New numbers show employers added 200,000 jobs last month, a solid number, as the unemployment rate stayed low at 4.1%. But that good news on the jobs front didn't mean good news on Wall Street. The Dow plunged 666 points today. That's the worst week for stocks in 2 years. MSNBC anchor and NBC News business correspondent Ali Velshi joins us to make some sense of it all. Ali, what's going on?
Well, Lester, the good news is that the unemployment rate is 4.1%. It's remained very, very low. And when you have low unemployment, you get higher wages. So wages are 2.9% higher than they were a year ago. That should be good. People will get out there and spend, and that'll heat up the economy. That's where the bad news comes in. That means the Federal Reserve will be more aggressive with increasing interest rates. So if you're a company, that good news suddenly doesn't look so good because you've got higher borrowing costs and higher labor costs. So that's why investors get a little nervous and they start selling out. Now, Lester, this is entirely normal. It's a cycle in which the economy gets better, interest rates go up, and the stock market starts to slow down. The question is whether today's losses were the beginning of a slowdown or just a bump in an otherwise pretty smooth rise in the stock market. The thing that's worth considering is that this stock market is up over 20% in the last year. That's double a normal average. Lester?
Some important perspective. Ali Velshi, thank you. A shocking moment in court today during a sentencing hearing for disgraced former USA Gymnastics Dr. Larry Nassar, the father of three of Nassar's accusers, overcome with anger, lunging at Nassar before deputies tackled him to the ground. NBC's Blake McCoy with more now in the courtroom drama and a warning some of the language may be offensive.
Well, I'm going to have to get someone.
Today, a father's rage exploding in court at the man accused of abusing his three daughters.
Let me have it, son of a bitch.
Just seconds earlier, Randall Margraves asking the judge for 5 minutes alone with Dr. Larry Nassar.
Would you do that?
That is not
yes
how
or
our...
no?
No, sir, I can't.
Would you give
do
me
that.
1 minute?
You know that I can't do that. That's not how our legal system works.
The dramatic courtroom moment playing out after he listened to two of his daughters read witness statements, like so many others outlining their distress after being sexually abused by the USA Gymnastics team doctor.
I'll never be able to trust another man ever again. You no longer hold power over me or my thoughts.
Randall Margraves was handcuffed and removed from the courtroom, re-entering later to apologize.
I knew they were going to read a statement. I didn't know what all was in it. I lost control. I apologized 100 times.
The judge declining to press charges but admonishing the behavior.
I can see that absolutely creating an anger and a rage so great that any parent would want to do physical harm. So I understand that.
Tonight, standing side by side with his daughters, he apologized again, a father's raw emotion.
Now I have to live with the fact that I failed to protect my daughters. This is a strong family. We will get through it.
A family's enduring pain. Blake McCoy, NBC News.
Let us turn now to what brings us and tens of thousands of others to Minneapolis this weekend, Super Bowl 52 between the New England Patriots and the Philadelphia Eagles. Sunday's game caps a year that has tested the NFL in ways it has never before confronted. And as the Eagles and Pats prepare for their showdown, it appears the strongest defense won't be on the field, but over and around this city. Tonight, the massive security across Minneapolis is hard to miss. More than 3,000 officers and agents from 60 law enforcement agencies. Black Hawk helicopters in the skies. Infrared cameras on the ground. The Super Bowl, a level one national security event.
This is the largest public safety operation in the history of our state.
A lucky 66,000 will see sports' biggest spectacle in person. The cheapest ticket, a stunning $3,000. And it's not just the game getting attention. Pink will sing the national anthem. The anthem, a controversial issue for the NFL, after it became a point of protests by players over police brutality and inequality, and sparked criticism from the president.
Wouldn't you love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of a bitch off the field right now, out, he's fired. He's fired!
Philadelphia Eagles star Malcolm Jenkins became known for raising a fist during the anthem to bring attention to social justice issues and inspiring the NFL to donate millions to the cause.
There was a need for us to, you know, protest and make our voices heard.
Today we caught up with NBC's Chris Collinsworth, a former player who will call the game.
You think the league comes out better for this in the end?
I think anytime there's an open discussion, anytime people don't have to hide their feelings, anytime, whether you're right or wrong, you get to say what's on your mind, I think America is better.
The NFL hopes come Sunday the focus will all be on the field. 40-year-old phenom Tom Brady and the Patriots looking for their third title in 4 years. The champs taking on the Eagles, who've never won a Super Bowl.
Eagles.
The crowd starting to pour in, like New Jersey school bus driver Gary Kilmer. Beloved by parents and kids on his route, this week they surprised the lifelong Eagles fan with tickets.
This would change my life.
Tonight, Gary sending us this video, finishing his last bus route before his trip.
Go Bears!
And Patriots superfan Aaron Gregory, who won tickets to the big game. That's her son, Brady.
Definitely need my Brady shirt, but which one?
I'll just take them all.
Erin, chronicling her trip from Boston for us.
Welcome to Minneapolis.
Thank you.
What does it mean to really be here?
Oh, it's so special to me. I'm so excited. And this year I said, I'm going. And then I got a call saying, you won tickets. And I was like, no way.
And now you're here.
And now I'm here.
A nonstop celebration of the streets of Minneapolis this weekend, despite an air temperature right now of 9 degrees and a wind chill. Let's not talk about the wind chill. Don't forget, the Super Bowl airs live on NBC this Sunday evening. Still ahead, he's lost his job and received death threats. Now the man who triggered that false missile alarm that sent Hawaii into a panic gives his side of the story to us. Also, winter weather danger on the roads. A massive pileup shutting down a major highway. Tonight, for the first time, the man responsible for the missile false alarm that spread panic and chaos across Hawaii is speaking out. NBC's Jacob Soboroff was there when it happened, and he's back in Hawaii tonight, where he was the first to sit down with the man at the center of it all.
Now fired from his job as a Hawaii State Warning Officer, the man responsible for sending the state into 38 minutes of chaos is speaking out. Facing death threats, he's requested anonymity.
I was 100% sure that it was the right decision, that it was real. I was convinced that it was real.
So just to be extremely clear, you are the person who triggered the false alert?
Yes. Unfortunately, I heard this is not a drill, and I didn't hear exercise at all. I'm really not to blame in this. But, it was a system failure. And I did what I was trained to do.
You believed you were following protocol?
Yeah, but, I did what I was trained to do as far as listen to the message and, as far as the time element that we were, the constraints we were under.
When you play back that morning in your head, what would you have done differently?
Well, I can't say that I would do anything differently based on what I saw and heard. I feel very badly for what's happened, the panic and the stress people felt and all the hurt and pain. I feel that myself. I've felt the last several weeks, and it's been very difficult. And
sharing his side of the story for the first time, just a day after Hawaii resumed testing of emergency alert sirens across the state. Future drills for a ballistic missile attack, however, remain suspended indefinitely. Jacob Soboroff, NBC News, Honolulu, Hawaii.
Coming up here tonight, thinking about a glass of wine, why science says it may be one of your smartest moves of the day. A blast of lake effect snow made for a dangerous day in the Midwest. In Michigan, 29 vehicles collided in a massive pileup, shutting down part of a highway for a time outside Kalamazoo. One person was taken to the hospital. Travel could remain hazardous in this region this weekend with more snow expected. If you love wine, you'll love this news. According to science, a little wine is good for the brain. A new study shows low levels of wine consumption per day can lower inflammation in the brain, clean out toxins, and lower your risk of dementia. A spectacular new view tonight from the surface of Mars. NASA's Mars rover Curiosity. Beaming back a panoramic look at the red planet. After 5 years of climbing, NASA says it was a moment to spin around and take a look from above at the crater where the rover first landed. The images stretch over 30 miles, showing the route the rover has taken since 2012. When we come back here tonight, why the road to the Super Bowl goes through a tiny town with a big role in the big game. Finally tonight from Minneapolis, a city buzzing with excitement for Super Bowl 52. Come Sunday, every touchdown scored will have a special connection to one small Ohio town. NBC's Kevin Tibbles explains.
Long before kickoff, an all-star team's at work making sure the Super Bowl's most essential element is game ready.
Without us, the game would be pointless.
Every ball used to score every Super Bowl point ever has been made by Wilson here in tiny Ada, Ohio.
Each team gets 108 balls that they can take to the game. And then there'll also be 12 balls there just for kicking.
Whoever called it pigskin kind of fumbled. They're cowhide, and it's a 25-step process. 4 reinforced panels stitched together inside out. It's the job of the turner to pull them right side out.
Ugh.
No mean feat.
Is it supposed to look like that?
When somebody scores a touchdown in the Super Bowl, what do you think?
I'm always looking for that ball, knowing I probably had a hand on that.
Then the finishing touch. Pam Bootwell has been lacing them up for 23 years.
So how many can you do a day?
150 to 180.
And of course, I know you'd feel deflated if I didn't ask this.
Are you going to do anything special this year to make sure Tom Brady doesn't get his hands on it?
Oh, that's so 2015. Come on.
So during the big game, keep your eye on the ball. It's made with love and pride and everything else.
That product was made in the heartland of America.
And that's what makes it super. Kevin Tibbles, NBC News, Ada, Ohio.
And that is Nightly News. I'm Lester Holt reporting from Minneapolis. I'll see you from here again tomorrow night. Good night, everyone.